Myron Metcalf, my man, a veteran now of Good Morning America. What's it like to be seen by the entire country?
Well, my mom loves it. I'm a good story at church, you know, for all of her friends. So I was happy about that.
Fans should be allowed to celebrate a big moment, especially when there's a big upset or a big victory.
But no, it's fun. People I haven't talked to in a long time reached out when they saw those. So that was a cool moment.
You were on GMA, however, talking about what you cover best, which is men's college basketball. Myron, I got to be honest. I feel like I haven't talked about or turned my head to the men's college basketball game in a while, but the women's game has been dominating. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Juju Watkins, and in fact, Clark hit another watermark on Sunday. What is there even to say at this point about the job the women are doing out there from your standpoint?
I mean, it's been an electric game. You know, and I think you got to give Caitlin Clark a lot of credit for being the star that's really brought a lot of people to the women's game. Angel Reese, what she's been able to do at LSU. Don't forget South Carolina and Dawn Staley. I was just out at the South Carolina UConn game and everything they've done in recent years. So, I mean, the women's game has been incredible. I don't think that's new. I think the women's game has always been incredible. But when you add someone like Caitlin Clark, who is one of the biggest basketball stars in America, regardless of level, pro or amateur, men's or women's, that changes the whole dynamic of the game.
Now Caitlin at the line. For the record, she ties it with that one. This for college basketball history. She does it with a foul shot. Caitlin Clark becomes the all-time leading scorer in major college basketball history, passing Pistol Pete Maravich, a record that's lasted for 54 years.
I mean, at the end of the day, like what Caitlin Clark is doing is really difficult and really challenging, and to do it at this level where this is the greatest era we've ever had in women's college basketball. If you look at all the stars within the sport, and she's shining above everybody.
It's not a zero-sum game, however, and when you look at the star power on the women's side, what does it make you think about the state of the men's game in 2024?
Well, we just don't have that, you know? We don't have a Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese, and that's okay. And I love this conversation, because for how many years has the women's game been compared to the men's game in terms of who's getting more attention and buzz and all these things? So I love this moment for the women's game. I don't even want to call it a moment. I love what's happening and the fact that so many people are paying attention to women's college basketball because of the star power. The men just haven't had anyone like that in a long time, you know? There's no Zion Williamson that's popped up. There's no Trae Young. My judgment of the men's game usually comes down to what people at my barbershop are saying, right? Because those are the casual fans who aren't paying attention every day to the game. And if they're talking about it, then you know it must be a big deal. And the last guy they were talking about was probably, again, Zion Williamson or someone like that. And the men's game just hasn't had that kind of a star since then.
You don't have highly specific, analytical, qualified takes from your barbershop? I'm shocked to hear this, Byron. We're into the month of March, which of course means that the madness is just around the corner. And I'll be the first to admit that I could use a refresher on what's happening in men's college basketball. Because between the Super Bowl, the NBA, spring training, and the women's side of college hoops, where stars like Caitlin Clark have put a spotlight on the game that we've never seen before, I just haven't gotten caught up. So today, as the regular season winds down and we prepare to get out our brackets, ESPN senior basketball reporter Myron Metcalf is here to help turn our attention to what's been happening on the men's side. On the court, in the stands, and everywhere in between the lines. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Monday, March 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Before we jump into the state of men's college basketball, Myron, we do have to touch on what you went on GMA to discuss, the issue of fans storming the court.
I understand that fans want to celebrate, and fans should be allowed to celebrate a big moment, especially when there's a big upset or a big victory. But that can't supersede safety.
As you pointed out there, Myron, this is a long-standing tradition, but it seems to have taken on new life this season. What's going on here, fam?
Fans are wilded a little bit. It's not a new thing. Court storming has been around forever, but I do think we're having more and more incidents where fans are bumping players.
Kyle Filipowski is being helped off by members of the Duke staff, and you saw the immediate bear hug surrounding him as this court storming is in full effect with Filipowski hobbled.
Having physical contact with players from the opposing team.
I was just trying to exit the court as quickly as possible, so I started running, and I was absolutely just hammered by somebody trying to run onto the court and basically blindsided and, kind of scary. Could have caused a pretty serious injury to me and knocked the wind out of me, but luckily my teammates kind of picked me up and got me off the court, so.
It feels like these court storms are happening faster than they ever have before, and I think it's just creating a really vulnerable situation for everybody involved, including the fans, but especially the players and coaches and staffers from the opposing team.
I'm more concerned about the well-being of our guys. You know, Flip sprains his ankle. When are we going to ban court storming? Like, when are we going to ban that?
I just think something has to be done because for anybody who sort of looked at the Kyle Filipowski situation with Duke and said, oh, that was no big deal, we shouldn't be dealing with this waiting for something really violent and terrible to happen. But it feels like that's how people in support of this are talking about it. Well, nothing too bad has happened yet. Well, let's just wait. If that's the attitude, and by the time that happens, then there'll be a whole bunch of people saying we should ban it. That's silly. Let's address it now so we never, ever get to that point.
Yeah, but there seem to be mixed feelings about this. I mean, do you think we can get to a place where this actually will be banned? Certain people on certain networks have been talking about throwing people in jail, rounding them up and detaining them. A lot of the suggestions I've heard seem very arcane, but I'm not sure how you solve this problem. Where do you think this is actually going to go in coming weeks?
I mean, I rock with Jay Billis. I've worked a lot with Jay Billis, but I don't think we should put people in jail.
All you have to do is once they're on the court, don't let them off. Just say you're all detained and give them all citations or arrest them if you want to. And then court stormings will stop the next day.
I don't think we need to get police involved, but I do think it has to be sort of this universal thing where it's not going to happen in a way that puts opposing teams in a vulnerable spot. So I think you have to start there. I'm fine with court storming if you can guarantee that the opposing team can get to a safe place. And if you can do that, then storm the court all you want. Anything short of that, there have to be even more significant fines. I think certainly if a fan bumps into a player, makes contact with the player, says something out of pocket with the player, you got to be able to address that as a school.
I'm of the opinion that one of the ways you could do this is you could make sure that if folks are storming the court too much, you just stop letting fans in the building and you say, hey, collective punishment for a collective activity. Maybe that seems arcane, but it happens in different regards in the soccer world, for example, where fans get unruly. They just don't let you play in front of those fans anymore. Yeah. Do you think that is something that schools or conferences might consider if we know that the people who want to do this are going to do it no matter what?
Well, Clinton, the way that the bills are set up in college sports, I don't think that's ever going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're going to let fans in no matter what. But I do think you bring up an important comparison. We should be paying attention to the soccer world in this because No sport has had more stampedes, more issues with fans than soccer. And we have watched tragedies happen in major soccer events because of crowd control issues. So what I hate, the arrogance I hate in college sports is like, it'll never happen here. Who says so? It's just people piling on top of other people. Of course it could happen here. I think one proposal that I've heard that I think has some legs that would make a lot of sense to me is, okay, you're Wake Forest, you storm the floor, you put players from Duke in harm's way, you're going to lose a home game next season in the ACC slate.
Right.
So now you get to not host a game as a result of what you just did. I think if you did something like that, I think fans would stop storming the floor because that's one less opportunity they have to even try to storm the floor. So things like that, I think, could work.
Okay, I want to switch gears here a little bit, Myron. You're writing about how attendance has been down across the board for men's college basketball. Some of it has been blamed on COVID and the pandemic, but do you think there's more at play here?
There's a lot more at play. I mean, this is an ongoing trend over the last decade or more. You know, a lot of those pandemic dips in college basketball, a lot of those schools bounce back. But if you look at what's happened over the last decade, you know, college basketball teams have had trouble filling up their buildings. And I think that's why you're seeing this trend of building smaller venues. And I think we're at an era where there has never been more competition for the attention of the average American sports fan. There has never been a greater opportunity for the average American sports fan to create a pretty awesome experience without ever leaving the house. You know, I think social media and Netflix are as much of a factor as the guy with the 4K TV in his man cave. Like, those are all things that these schools are competing against when it comes to bringing people into the building. I just left Allen Fieldhouse, where you got to sell out every night, right? Every time that building opens, people fill it up. But those are bad examples to look at this issue. Everyone isn't Cameron Indoor. You know, everyone isn't Rupp Arena. If you look at across college basketball, leaders, administrators are trying to figure out, how do we fill the building every night for these games? It is becoming a greater concern.
You mentioned that there's no LeBron James, or to probably be more accurate, one of his contemporaries, Carmelo Anthony, in the men's game these days. No big ticket attraction like there have been in years past. Why is that the case just on a basic level, Myron?
I think it's a few factors. Obviously the G League, Overtime Elite. I think there are a lot of players who kind of go on that route, skip college. I think that's a factor. I think you have players who don't feel like they have to go to Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky anymore. I think when you have Zion Williamson at Duke, it's like the perfect combination of everything. So I think that's been a challenge, that some of the best players have just gone to schools that don't fit into that blue blood category necessarily. But I do think the NIL issue will maybe bring some of those stars back who would have gone to Overtime Elite or the G League. But right now, there are a lot of players who are just saying, I don't want to go to college. And if I do, I don't have to play at one of those big time schools and I can still be a top five pick. So I think those are some of the issues that have stopped us from creating this perfect combination of a star player at a school with a giant fan base.
How do you think the NIL factor can help this men's college basketball issue of people showing up?
Yeah, I think it's already helping. I mean, you look at a guy like Zach Edey, who maybe Zach Edey just goes pro last year after winning the Wooden Award. But he comes back, he gets a bunch of NIL money, and now he's probably going to win the Wooden Award again. So I do think you have players who, especially those guys in the in-between space of the NBA, maybe they're a second-round pick, late first-round pick. Maybe they can play their way onto the team, but more likely, probably going to spend some time in the G League. Those guys are opting to come back and play college basketball, and that is creating, I think, more of a foundation, more of a familiarity. Armando Bacot at North Carolina. So I think it's already kicking in. But I think the biggest impact that NIL is having is for all the guys who were going to Overtime Elite, the G League, I think they'll go play college basketball now. You're already seeing that with guys like Cooper Flagg, a superstar who's on his way to Duke and will be the biggest thing in college basketball next season. Maybe he goes to Overtime Elite or to the G League without NIL, but he's coming to college.
I know that when you get on the road a lot like you do, or at least in my experience, when I go to certain venues, I say, they could be doing this better. I might like to see this or that here in this location or this venue. What do you think are some of the things schools could do to try to get more people, get more butts in the seats?
Well, I think they're doing it, right? I mean, I think you have schools that are trying to create a more VIP experience for those top spenders. I've seen schools expand the student section, just doing more for students to make them feel like they're a part of it. You know, I did a game at Maryland last season, man, and they have a practice before the game, like 2 hours ahead of time for the students. They let the students in and they go over all of their cheers. You know, I've been to places like Grand Canyon where every night they have a theme for the students to follow. So I think those are all elements you can do. I think we have to stop assuming that the fan who's in the building only wants to pay attention to the game on the floor. There are a lot of studies that show that people love the social element and just the ability to escape from their regular lives more than anything that happens on the floor. So I think more opportunities, whether it's a TV lounge or TVs around the arena, so that you can watch that Monday night football game in the concourse if that's what you want to do. Having great Wi-Fi. I've talked to administrators who've talked about that, like that being a primary thing in today's era. But I think the other factor, and this is what's out of the control of the athletic directors and presidents, and even sometimes the coaches, is you got to put a good product on the floor. You got to make it feel like being in that building is a must-see event. And it has to be bigger than the game. And if you can create that experience, I think that's how you get more fans in the stands.
It puts us in this fascinating cycle as well, where we have a regular season that the diehards pay attention to, a lot of casuals kind of observe, and then the tournament comes around and it feels like it kind of saves everything. How sustainable do you think that is? And do you think that in general, the tournament makes up for all of the shortcomings, I'm using air quotes here, that we might find in the men's college game in a regular season?
Yeah, the tournament is our Mardi Gras. Even if things are slow, even if you tell me that it's not a great year for college basketball, I mean, it is the greatest sporting event in the world. It's the greatest 3 weeks in the world. So that will always be the anchor. I think the challenge is, how do you create more buzz leading up to that moment? And I think that's what the men's game has lacked this year, is not giving America enough of those household names to pay attention as the tournament approaches. But there is sort of a lockdown spot on everybody's calendar in the sports world and beyond, where once that tournament begins, we own the sporting calendar. We own the American sports fans. So that is always going to be something to fall back on. However, it's dangerous, I think, to use that to measure the game, because this is a 5-month season. Mm. And the reality is, those 4 months before the tournament, we are going to have to make some changes and address some issues in a really challenging climate to get fans' attention.
Coming up, Myron takes us through one of the most confounding men's college basketball seasons in recent years. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, Myron, a few weeks ago, you published a piece with the headline, quote, "Figuring out men's college basketball this season is one big headache," end quote. What's been so befuddling about what's happening on the court this year, sir?
Just the results have been all over the place. You know, like just when you think you have a team that is probably going to win a national championship that everybody's chasing, they lose or something goes wrong. So it's just been chaotic. I think we have a couple of really, really good teams at the top of college basketball, maybe two or three And then from there, you know, it's 10 to 15 teams that are pretty good and could also win a national championship. So there was a lot of parity. I always hate using that word, but it is appropriate for this season.
We've got some different storylines that have stood out in different conferences, the AAC, the ACC. What are some of the rivalries that we have seen that have developed this year?
Well, I just did Florida Atlantic versus Memphis for TV, and that was a cool game, really amazing atmosphere.
Off the Nicholas Jordan offensive rebound, Quinterly sets up Walton, and he sticks it right over Vlad Goldin. The 7-1 junior couldn't get to it.
Florida Atlantic beat Memphis in the tournament last year. And now here they are competing. Now that Florida Atlantic has joined the American Athletic Conference, they're going to play again in the AAC tournament. I'll be there as well. So that could be sort of a budding rivalry. I think Houston coming into the Big 12 and just sort of asserting themselves, Houston, Kansas, I think it's going to be a fun rivalry going forward for people to watch. Lost to Kansas at Kansas in the first matchup, but then the season finale is going to be Kansas traveling to Houston. So I think that's going to be fun as well going forward. I think this has just been a fascinating year in the SEC as well. Everyone knows Kentucky, and they're kind of up and down playing. It feels like they're hitting their stride, and it's usually Kentucky versus everybody. But Tennessee and what they've been able to do, Dalton Connect, the Northern Colorado transfer, who now is a potential lottery pick, has just been amazing to watch. Alabama-Auburn isn't just a football rivalry. Those two teams have played some really good basketball this season.
Donaldson all the way, left-handed, no good. Ripped rebound, up and in.
So I'm looking forward to seeing if some of these teams can maintain their momentum going forward.
Myron, please do break down though what's going on at the top of the rankings. However, I feel like I watched a 1-4 game the other day with UConn and Marquette, and then UConn turned around and got beat themselves. I was very confused because the first game was a blowout too. What's going on at the top of the rankings?
I think we all were confused by that, you know, because I think UConn's probably the team that most people would pick as a national champion right now. They've been great all year. But then, yeah, they turned around and lost to Creighton. But I also think they just have a very high ceiling and they could repeat. You know, this could be the first repeat champ since Florida in 06-07. Donovan Clingan, the big man who's going to be a pro if he decides to leave.
Well, this has been highly intense. Oh, Clingan off balance. What a finish on the reverse.
Tristan Newton. UConn, to me, is the most talented and most complete team in America. Purdue has Zach Edey, who is the greatest force I think we've seen in college basketball in a long time.
Edey, jump up with the right hand, off the heel, and the
7'4", except now he's lost some weight. He's more mobile. He can guard in space, and he's turned himself into potentially a lottery pick in this NBA draft. So I think Purdue certainly has the best player. And then Houston is the best defensive team in America. When they just decide you're not going to get to the basket, you just don't. Calvin Sampson always coaches his guys to be tough, and this is certainly the toughest team in America. And then from there, you know, I bet you Tennessee and Dalton Connect, who you look at them, you may not think you're dealing with a big-time baller, but when you put the ball in his hands, you let him out there.
Adu threw it up with the left. He takes it away from hand glock. Oh, what a follow by Connect!
He's a big, explosive, long kid is what he is.
The best scorer in America, Dalton Connect, and then a Tennessee team plays great defensively. Marquette has been good outside of when they played UConn over the weekend and got destroyed Arizona. I think still has a high ceiling. Kansas dealing with some injury issues. I'd say Iowa State is probably the team that people aren't talking about enough. They still have a chance to win the Big 12 title. They don't necessarily have a great player, but just a lot of balance. Four guys averaging like 10 points a game. And I think that's a squad that people should watch as well. And then North Carolina, which I think Hubert Davis has a good team, really good team. And when they're all on the same page, I think North Carolina can play with anybody in America. And obviously Duke as well. Kyle Filipowski, another projected lottery pick.
Filipowski backs down. One-on-one. Filipowski, the drop step and the finish.
That's a team with a lot of young talent around him. They have the chance to make a Final Four run also.
You've mentioned programs that have things going in the right direction, but when we think about some of the disappointments this season, Rick Pitino and St. John's are a blaring example. He was supposed to turn things around, and it hasn't started smoothly. He's out here ripping his own players in press conferences. What is happening with that situation, Myron?
Yeah, that's probably been the biggest disappointment. I think it's just the way he recruited all those guys and then had that press conference where he ripped them all. I just don't think that helps.
I don't think they move well laterally. I don't think they're going to pick it up in the next week. I mean, Sean Conway gives you everything he can. He's slow laterally. About five guys are slow laterally.
I just don't think that helps. You know, what I think Rick Pitino is caught in is what a lot of guys have been caught in his generation. Like, guys just don't coach that way anymore. You know, there was a time when you could get up on the microphone, rip your whole team, and people would celebrate that. And they'd say, yeah, you know, you should make those comments publicly about your team because that's hard coaching. I don't know that this generation responds to that. You know, this is a St. John's team, and I'm sure Rick Pitino knows it, that's like a couple of games away, a couple of moments away from being right at the top of the standings. I just think Rick Pitino is dealing with a new generation of players who are not as receptive to that old school style of coaching. Like, I just don't know that that works anymore the way that it did 20 years ago.
Myron, give us a couple things that you specifically are watching closely as conference tournaments get ready to begin.
Well, I think if you're a fan and you're like, okay, what tournament do I want to be a part of? I think that's the SEC. Just so much star power. Dalton Connect and Tennessee and what they've been able to do. Well, they went out and go into the tournament with a lot of momentum. You know, Alabama has been the best offensive team in America. I mean, that's going to be fun to watch. South Carolina, it's probably the best story in the country. Lamont Paris, last year they lost 21 games. This year they've won 23. And I think just the way that team has been able to turn around has been fascinating. And then clearly Kentucky. I mean, this is a Kentucky team where I don't want to tell you where to put your money. But if they hit their ceiling, they can beat anybody in America, especially over the course of 3 weeks. And then you have a team like Illinois that I think Purdue is certainly the best team in the Big Ten. But Illinois, I think, has a chance to beat them in the Big Ten tournament, has a chance to maybe be the team with the highest ceiling in that league if for some reason Purdue loses early. So those are some of the storylines I'm watching going into the conference tournament.
And for all of y'all out there, if you see Mr. Metcalf courtside at a game with plans to storm the court, be careful around him. Man, it's a family to get home to. Thank you, Myron.
Thanks, man. Don't storm it with me.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. Talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.